Mark Twain, the man who wrote Huckleberry Finn and Tom Sawyer.
My life was an interesting one. I worked at several jobs, some of which I liked and some of which I was not very good at. One thing stayed the same, no matter what I did or where I was, and that was my love of books. I was born on the 30th of November, 1835, in a tiny village called Florida, in Missouri, in the USA. My parents were John and Jane Clements, and they named me Samuel Longhorn Clements. I later changed my name to Mark Twain, and that is how I am still known today. My father was a judge, but although we weren't poor, there wasn't any money to buy things like books or toys. Life was sometimes difficult. Medical advice and facilities were basic, and there was little protection against disease. I was the sixth of seven children, but several of my brothers and sisters died when they were just babies or small children. Pleasant died when he was 6 months old, 6 years before I was born. When I was three, my sister Margaret died, and then Benjamin died in 1842 when I was seven. Each time I saw my parents upset at the death of another child, it upset me. And I realized at a very young age that as well as being cruel, life could be short. In 1839, when I was 4 years old, we moved to a place near the Mississippi River called Hannibal. It was a small community in the fast-developing area of the Midwest between St. Louis and Kansas City. It was an interesting place to grow up. Being on the Mississippi River, there was a lot of activity as steamboats came into the port three times a day. There was also a lot of violence, and I witnessed death in the streets more than once. Just before my 12th birthday in 1847, my father died from a disease called pneumonia. Suddenly, we had no source of income. We didn't have enough money to buy food and clothes, and so naturally there was no money to pay the fees at the private school I had been going to. It was time for me to start working. I found a job as an apprentice printer at a newspaper called the Hannibal Courier. The pay wasn't much, but it did allow me to feed myself. I stayed there for 2 years and learned the basics of printing. Then, in 1851, when I was 15, I started working with my brother Orion, who owned the Hannibal Messenger, a small newspaper that focused on local news stories and gossip. My work mainly involved printing, but occasionally I was allowed to write an article or help edit the work of other writers. It was at my brother's newspaper that I discovered I enjoyed writing. As well as being a busy port, our town was also a junction for the new steam trains. After working on the Messenger for 3 years, I decided to travel and gain a wider experience of life. At the age of 18, I traveled to New York to see the USA's first World Fair. This was where the latest industrial and technological inventions from all over the world could be seen. It was a great event, showing what can be done by hard work. It made me realize there was a big world out there, but before I could tour it, I needed to earn some money. I moved from New York to Philadelphia, and I got a job as a printer. I also spent time in St. Louis and Cincinnati, all the time working and gaining valuable experience. Moving from place to place kept me sharp as I watched people and learned about life. I spent my evenings at the local library, reading a far wider range of topics than was available in any school. As my formal education had been limited, teaching myself by reading and gaining life experience was the basis for my own writing. In 1855, I went to stay with my brother Orion, who was now living in Iowa. and I continued printing and writing for the next 2 years. By 1857, I felt it was time to move on and gain more experience. I really wanted to explore more of the world, and my intention was to go to Brazil. I got as far as New Orleans. I met a riverboat captain called Horace Bigsby, who taught me how to be a pilot on a river steamboat. It was difficult, skilled work, but it was very well paid. And in total, I spent 4 years on the river. Life on the Mississippi was a rich source of stories, and at each port, people shared views and news. Sailing up and down the 2,000 miles of the river taught me a lot. In 1859, I earned my steamboat pilot's license. One day in the same year, I learned that my brother Henry had been killed. The steamboat he was on, the Pennsylvania, had exploded. I felt particularly bad because it was I who had encouraged Henry to work on steamboats. His death was tragic, but steamboats were essential, as they were the basis of trade and economic development. On either side of the river were the plantations where African slaves worked in the fields, growing cotton and tobacco under the hot sun. I had grown up in a state of the USA where it was normal practice to have slaves working on the plantations. As a child, I had not really questioned whether slavery was right or not. Now, for the first time, I began to form an opinion about it. And as the Civil War came closer, I heard other people's views too. I gathered a lot of information for a book I was writing called Life on the Mississippi. In 1861, when the Civil War started, the boat I was working on was taken by the Confederate Army. In the beginning, I had some sympathy for their cause and joined them as a volunteer soldier. But after 2 weeks, I decided I was not a fighting man, and I left. Trading on the river had stopped because of the war, which meant that I no longer had a job. In 1861, I joined my brother Orion, who was now in Nevada. He had a senior position in President Lincoln's government. Spending time with him, I came to realize the injustice of slavery and the need for change. In 1862, I moved on to Virginia City and got a job as a silver miner. I had dreams of becoming rich and being able to buy whatever I wanted. It was wild country, and it was the source for my book, Roughing It, which I wrote later on. I wasn't very good at being a miner, and I had no money at all. When I was offered a job as a newspaper reporter on the Territorial Enterprise, I accepted it at once. It was there that I realized I needed a new name. Samuel Langhorne Clements was not an easy name to remember or say, and so in 1863, I changed it to Mark Twain. I liked the sound of the name, but it was actually used by riverboat men to describe the depth of water. Water was measured in fathoms. A fathom was 1.85 meters deep, and Mark Twain meant water that was 2 fathoms deep, 3.7 meters. Later, I continued my journey west, and arriving in San Francisco in California, I found a job as a journalist. San Francisco was an amazing place on a beautiful bay, where the noise of construction could be heard everywhere as the city was being built. Here there were people of many nationalities who had settled. Farmers, men searching for gold, and those trying to make their fortune by playing cards lived side by side. People worked hard during the day and then played hard in the evening. Thanks to my writing skills, I worked for several local newspapers. The San Francisco Morning Call was one of them. Also, I wrote for the Daily Morning and Alta California. At last, I was earning enough money so that I could focus on writing. And I went in search of great stories. Later, I also worked for the Sacramento Union. In the meantime, I wrote a number of short stories. One that became well known was called Jim Smiley and His Jumping Frog, and it was published in the New York Saturday Press on the 18th of November, 1865. The following year, I went to Hawaii on the ship the Ajax, which was making its first voyage. Arriving at these islands in the Pacific Ocean, I found myself in the most perfect, beautiful place. The beaches, the sun, an easy lifestyle there tempted me to stay. But I had always had difficulty staying in one place. I constantly felt the need to explore new places and meet people, and then write about my experiences. A Californian paper sent me to Panama. I was becoming well known now as a writer, and as my stories were becoming more popular, it seemed that people liked my satirical humor and style. Then suddenly, in 1867, I was asked to tour the Mediterranean by boat and write about what I saw. This was an experience that was too good to refuse. I crossed the Atlantic in a ship called Quaker City, and then spent 5 months observing and writing as I visited the countries of Europe and the Middle East. Combining work with tourism and pleasure gave me the most amazing opportunity to explore my creativity. I sent back regular reports to the American newspapers, and when I came back to the USA after my trip, I was surprised to find that I had become famous. I also realized that there was more than enough material from my trip for me to write a whole book. And this is what I did. My first book, The Innocents Abroad, was published in 1869 and became a bestseller. In the same year as my visit to Europe, 1867, an event occurred which really changed my life. I met a special woman, Olivia Langdon, who was the daughter of a rich New Yorker. Her brother, who I had met on board the Quaker City, introduced us in New York. And in February of 1870, we got married and went to live in Buffalo. On the day of my wedding, I received $4,000 in royalties from my book. Olivia's father was also generous, giving me shares in a newspaper called the Buffalo Express. Towards the end of that year, our son Langdon was born. With the income from my royalties and the Buffalo Express, I was able to write full-time for a living. After all, I now had plenty of experience. Roughing It was published in 1872, and just when life was looking good, tragedy struck when Langdon, aged 19 months, died of the disease diphtheria. I was haunted by terrible thoughts. Were we in some way responsible for his death? Should we have done more to prevent the infection? I remembered how upset my mother and father were when my brothers and sisters had died. And, just like my parents, I experienced many days of darkness. To cope with the sadness, I worked day and night. After our daughter Susie was born in 1872, we decided to move house and get away from the memories. In 1873, we moved to a place called Hartford and built a house with 19 rooms. There, we were fortunate to have two more daughters, Clara and Jean. With a strong home life, I was able to concentrate on writing. And I was filled with ideas. Each day, I worked on a new idea for my stories. I published one of them in 1876. It was called The Adventures of Tom Sawyer, and it was very popular, with many copies being sold. I wrote more books, Tramp Abroad in 1880, which is based on a tour of Europe I had done in 1878, and The Prince and the Pauper, published in 1881. In 1883, I started my own publishing company, which was called Charles L. Webster & Co. In the same year, I published The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and Life on the Mississippi. I kept writing and published A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court in 1889. This was a mixture of science fiction and history, and received quite a lot of criticism, and I started to experience financial problems. The publishing house I owned, managed by my nephew, ran into problems. Several bad business decisions had been made that led to losses. In addition, I had invested heavily in the Page typesetter, which was a machine with keys that prints letters onto paper. Unfortunately, new technology came along which replaced it, and I lost all the money I had invested. I needed to start writing again. I wrote The American Claimant with another writer called William Dean in 1891, and Tom Sawyer Abroad by Huck Finn in 1894, but still needed to earn more money. In 1894, I went on a worldwide tour, including visits to Canada, Australia, India, and South Africa. These proved to be interesting and challenging experiences, which gave me the inspiration to write again. And I published my last novel, Pudd'nhead Wilson, in 1894. However, because of continued financial difficulties, I filed for bankruptcy in 1894. 2 years later, my daughter Susie died of a disease called meningitis. My wife and I were filled with grief. I could not stay at home. So once more, I went abroad and I wrote a book about travel called Following the Equator. As well as writing, I became interested in politics. I was unhappy about some of the imperialist activities the government was involved in, for example, when they tried to gain control of the Philippines. Some of my writings against the government were controversial, and there were editors who refused to publish my work. I was even called a traitor because some people thought I was against our national beliefs. Once again, travel saved me. And in 1903, we decided to go to Italy for a holiday. While we were there, my wife became ill and got steadily worse. After 34 years of marriage, Olivia died in 1904. Dark days were made worse by business worries. Things looked black for me. I had no wife, no money, and nothing to support me when I grew old. I decided to go on another trip and see some friends. I visited Berlin, Paris, Vienna, and Florence. On the way, I gave lectures and speeches and received awards. However, one can only travel so far and for so long. Eventually, we all need to return somewhere comfortable. And I decided that the place I would call my last home was New York. For me, New York was fascinating. They say that money does not grow on trees, but it certainly seemed to grow near those in Wall Street, the area of the city where financial business was done. The noise and fuss of the city was an inspiration to me. I also liked the way you could look at a person and see from the expression on their face exactly what they were feeling. From my window and during my walks, I watched. From here, I wrote the story of my life. In 1905, I was 70 years old. On the night of my birthday, we had a party at an excellent restaurant called Delmonico's. President Teddy Roosevelt came to New York for the occasion, and it was a special evening in a special city. Even though I had written about my life, I had more living to do. In 1907, I was given an honorary Doctor of Letters degree from Oxford University in England to add to the one I'd been given 6 years before by Yale University here in the USA. I found it funny, thinking about the fact that I had finished school when I was 12 years old. The following year, I moved to Reading in Connecticut. And then, in 1909, Jean, my youngest daughter, died. I always remembered a story my parents had told me when I was a young boy. On the day that I was born, there was a bright light in the sky that wasn't normally there. My parents wondered what it meant. Could it be a special sign from above to celebrate my birth? Their neighbors and friends came around to our house, and some of them had great fears that perhaps this was the end of the world. Everyone had an opinion. But what was the reality? For some, it was a time of hope. For others, it was a time of fear. But soon, the great light disappeared, and people went back to work and their normal lives. Later, we learned that the bright light was Halley's Comet, which is visible from Earth every 74 or 75 years. I knew that it was due to make an appearance again soon, and I thought that it signaled the time for me to go. I was right. Halley's Comet appeared again on the 20th of April, 1910. The very next day, I had a heart attack and died. I would have been most disappointed if my death had not happened as my birth had, with a bright, unusual light appearing in the sky.